This is Volvo striking a deal with the Google of China, the Swedish automaker tying up with Baidu to develop driverless taxis. The deal sets up a battle between Baidu and the actual Google. The US search giant has its own driverless cars program in partnership with Fiat Chrysler and others.
This gourmet grocery store is not located in New York or LA, but hard-hit Caracas. The well-stocked shelves, in stark contrast to Venezuela's barren supermarkets, where most people line up for hours just to get their hands on the most basic goods, like milk and diapers. But in recent months, these fancy privately run stores, known as bodegones, have popped up all over the country, selling everything from fine wines to imported baby formula and truffle salt.
Auto rivals Volkswagen and Ford are in exploratory talks to work together to develop self-driving cars and electric vehicles, building an alliance to save the companies billions of dollars. That's according to a source close to the matter, who also said the German and US car makers are due to provide an update before year end.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is Friday, November the 2nd. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. The end of the business week, lots going on in the program this morning. Paul Nolte is here for our regular Friday conversation. We'll bring in Paul momentarily to talk about the economy, jobs report due out today. Lots of other things going on as well. Then in our second segment this morning, Brian Summers will be here from skiff.com. We will tell you the latest of at least what we know from the plane crash involving a 737 MAX aircraft. Brian will be with us at about 5:40 this morning. Some other aviation and travel news as well. But let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. And I'll warn you now, my computer had just crashed before we went on the air, so I'm going to have to try to wing some of the numbers here, and maybe I'll bring in Paul Nolte as well to help. But it looks like we're going to have a positive open on Wall Street a little bit later on this morning. Dow futures are up about 204 points this morning on news that there may be a trade deal with China coming. The president tweeting that overnight, indicating that maybe a trade deal was in the works. Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management. I'll just bring you in right now since my computer is not functioning properly. We'll get the numbers a little bit later on. Paul, good morning.
Welcome. Good morning, Steve.
You have looked at some of the numbers as well from the markets, not only here but around the world in Asia as well. Everything looking good this morning.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the expectation is now that there is a deal in the works, and certainly with the G20 coming up at the end of the month, that's really what's driving the market here. We saw a jump yesterday. We're seeing another pop here overnight. The international markets are flying. Emerging markets were up 2.5% yesterday, and they look like adding about the same amount again today. So what we've seen during October is a very volatile month. November's fabulous. We're up now 2 days in a row in November, and things are all back to what passes for normal. But I think really it's the trade overhang. We heard a lot about that with a lot of the earnings numbers that were coming out from many companies and their impact. So certainly any type of deal that gets done here takes that off the table, and we could see a big earnings pop. We can see a big stock market rise if indeed we do get a deal.
Yeah, and the reports are that the president has directed his administration to draft a deal with China. This initial report came from Bloomberg News, apparently, that the deal, at least the president wants to put something on paper for the Chinese president to see at the G20 summit in Argentina later this month. So we haven't heard anything from China yet on this, and
no.
You have to take the president's tweets with kind of a grain of salt.
So that's, I said, it's a very fluid, and I think if you were looking at it, that's what's really driving the market here, and whether that deal comes to fruition or not. And we've seen and we've heard about this in the past. We have a deal, we don't have a deal, they're at the table, not at the table, and that keeps the markets on edge here a little bit. But at least right now, It looks good.
Back to October on the markets. It's probably a month a lot of people want to forget.
I think so. We ended the month in pretty good fashion. We've actually seen now a bounce from the lows. We're up 3-4% actually off the lows that we set just last week. So, you know, again, it's one of those events in the market. We saw it in February. We've seen it before where the markets drop 8 to 10%. It's a correction. It's not the beginning of a bear market. The economic data continues to be good, and that's really what's kind of guiding us through this at this point. As long as the economic data remains good and we see expansion in the U.S. economy, we don't see a bear market. We can see these types of declines in the markets, but they're not really much to get worried about from the long-term perspective.
Back to earnings. Yesterday, Apple reported earnings. Shares fell pretty sharply after the report. The company has not sold as many iPhones. Here we go back to the FANG stocks again.
Yeah.
Apple saw a big hit yesterday.
They're disappointed. You know, if you take a look at the other parts of their business, the amount of cash they're generating and all the rest of it, it was actually a very good report. What Apple is now going to try to do, and they did in the call a little bit yesterday, is try to get investors' focus away from specific sales of iPhones or Macs or any of their products and take a look at the overall business and take a look at the health of the overall business. The problem is investors have been, historically at least, focused on those types of sales, and it's going to take a few quarters before they kind of go and turn themselves around a little bit and look at the business as a whole.
Well, and the other part of that, too, is, you know, I listened in part of it, 47 million fewer iPhones. That's not something to shake a stick at. That's a lot of iPhones that it didn't sell.
No, it is. Yeah. It is a lot of iPhones. But like I said, if you take a look at the total revenues, you take a look at the earnings and revenue numbers beat expectations. Again, they're sitting out of just a ton of cash. They'll probably raise their dividend again. So the company is doing fine. And that's why I said, I think if you focus on that one segment of their business, you could be disappointed. But I think if you look at the overall business model for Apple and what they're doing, the total revenues and certainly the earnings growth that we're seeing, it's not bad. And valuations for the company remain reasonable at this point. So I don't think it's a wildly overvalued. It's not wildly undervalued either. But at current prices, I think it's pretty reasonably priced.
Paul, it's jobs report Friday. Estimates, your guesses for what the jobs report's going to say today.
I flipped a quarter about 14 times and came out with about 16 different numbers. The estimate right now is about 200, but there's a big range around that of anything we're down to about 130 or 150 up to about 250. Some of it is going to be hurricane related. Remember last month we had numbers that were below estimates. Some of that was attributed to the hurricane through Virginia and North Carolina. We may see a little bit of that with Florida and Georgia this month. But I think we'll see that snap back, so we'll see some good revisions, I think, to the back months. The unemployment number probably still at 3.7, but the one that we'll be keeping an eye on, as we always do, is wage growth, and that's been ticking higher. We're going to be, we should see that around the 3% level, and it's the first time we'll crack 3 in this since the recession.
I've seen estimates as low as even 134,000. One analyst I follow from Bankrate predicted 134,000. Do we look at, I know I ask you this every time, but do we look at the ADP report that we saw earlier this week, which was really strong?
It was. And the Challenger Great Christmas report is the other one that comes out. So there's one on Wednesday and one on Thursday. The weekly jobless claims, all of those point to still a pretty solid jobs report. Number. And if you look at the ISM data that gets reported and some of the market data, which does take a look at the employment, that's market, M-A-R-K-I-T, they take a look at the manufacturing and service side of the economy. Both of those are pointing to a pretty solid jobs report.
The Beige Book, recent Beige Book, said the jobs in most the tight job market affecting the companies that are looking for jobs are looking for skilled engineers, finance, sales professionals, construction, manufacturing workers, IT professionals, and truck drivers. That's where they're having the hardest time finding people for those jobs.
Right. And that, you know, as we were seeing in the in a lot of the jobs report, the JOLTS report, the opening job openings report, there's more jobs right now than there are people looking for a job. So we have not seen that in decades. So that's what I said. We could see some more wage pressure. We've been hearing about it for a long time that, you know, wages are going up, and they are very, very slowly. And it's really a makeup of the job market. If we see a lot of the top end jobs going, engineering, et cetera, as you mentioned, construction, those are generally higher paying jobs. But what we've been seeing in this expansion is a lot of it is on the lower end of the wage scale. So hotels, restaurants, et cetera, those can impact that wage growth number and have tended to hold it down. So, again, if we can get the engineering construction job growth going, we could see that wage growth number really pick up here.
Part of in addition to raising salaries, companies are trying some other things too to get new workers and recruit people. There's evidence of more bonuses being issued, signing bonuses, more vacation time, flexible work hours. They're pulling out all of the tricks from the closet to get people.
But what's interesting about all of those is they're not permanent. And that's one of the things that they've gotten. You're right. They've gotten very creative. But my point to that, when you look at the wage growth number, that doesn't show up. Yeah. If I pay you a bonus to move to my company, that doesn't show up in wage growth. If I give you additional vacation time, that doesn't show up in your wages. So yes, it gets very creative, but it's not permanent. If I raise your salary to $25 an hour, I'm on the hook for that in a recession, in good times, in bad. So that's part of the reason why you're seeing companies do that.
And doesn't that say something too about the climate? I mean, if you have a company that's just fighting to the very end, to the bloody end, to not raise your salary and give you all this other stuff, what does that say about the climate that we're in right now?
Well, I mean, to be honest, that too is some of the workers that you're hiring now, the millennials, are not necessarily as focused on the end salary. It's all about the work-life balance. So for them, a lot of them are saying, I'm okay making the money I'm making. I really want some more time off. I want to be able to travel. I want to be able to do this, that, or the other thing. So certainly I look at my kids that are entering the workforce, and 2 weeks of vacation goes pretty quick. They'd love to have 3 weeks of vacation and would be happy at their current salary if they were to be able to pick up additional vacation time. So it depends on what's important, and it's certainly a changing workforce. You want to be flexible in trying to address those needs and keep those keep the people engaged and involved.
I'm not a millennial, and I would not say no to another 2 weeks of vacation. That certainly would be like a nice little bonus.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's what I said. So, I mean, there's other ways to do it, and different people are looking for different things, and certainly flexibility in that pay is important.
Paul, about 60 days left in the year. What should we be doing with our portfolios heading to the end of the year?
Yeah, we've been through the month of October, we've been raising a little bit of cash. We've got a nice bounce here in the markets. We're looking to redeploy a little bit of it internationally. We still think the U.S. economy is okay. We think that this bounce that we're seeing right now is much like we saw in February. We saw a retest a couple months later, so it could be a little bit of a trading range for a month or two. We've got the elections, obviously, next week, and that may have some short-term impact. But we are in the best part of the year seasonally. The markets tend to do very well November through April, May. So this is a good time to take a look around, and again, with some things on sale. Certainly a lot of the tech sectors on sale. The international markets are on sale. It's a good place to be picking up some bits and pieces of the market.
If people want to have this conversation with you one-on-one, how can they do that, Paul?
They can always drop me a note at pnolte@kingsviewam.com and be happy to start that conversation.
We'll be back later this morning with a podcast of the jobs report. So we'll send out a notice on Twitter and social media about that, but expect that mid-morning from me and Paul.
And we'll see how my Ouija board did.
Right, exactly. We have until then to put some money on it, I suppose, right? Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Thanks, Paul. Have a great weekend.
We'll see you then.
And Paul will be back with us again next Friday, as he is every Friday here on the Opening Bell.
Hi, this is Catherine Davis from Chicago Inno with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, presented by the 1871 Momentum Awards. Leap, a new Chicago startup making it easier for e-commerce companies to launch retail stores, raised a $3 million round led by Palo Alto-based Costono Ventures. Other backers include Equal Partners and Brand Foundry Ventures. Google employees around the world held a walkout Thursday in protest of how the company has handled recent sexual misconduct allegations, and Google employees in Chicago's Fulton Market office participated in the demonstration. Employees were responding to a $90 million exit package Google gave to Andy Rubin despite allegations of sexual misconduct. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at chicagoinno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us in our Friday edition of the Opening Bell. Our regular Friday conversation with Brian Summers, who's the aviation business editor at skiff.com, focusing at least at the beginning this morning on the 737 MAX crash in Indonesia, and some other travel and aviation news this morning. Brian joins us via Skype from Los Angeles. Brian, let's begin with, obviously, Lion Air crash, the investigation going full steam here to try to figure out what happened to this aircraft and all of the people on board.
Yeah, earlier this week, a Boeing 737 MAX 8 operated by Lion Air, which is an Indonesian low-cost airline, crashed about 13 minutes after takeoff from Jakarta. I think what spooks people out a little bit is this was a brand new airplane. It was delivered in August. It had only flown about 800 hours. And this is a new airplane, not just for Lion Air, but it's the most updated version of the 737. So yes, people have been flying on these planes for 50 years or so, but the MAX 8, this technology is brand new. So 189 people died on that airplane, which meant that just about every seat was full. You know, the answer to your question, of course, is we don't know what happened. There are some reports that the plane had been flying erratically before the crash, including the day before the crash, and there may have been some problems with instruments. But it's important to know that, you know, sometimes what we think happened in the beginning doesn't end up being the cause when we find out what happens. Another thing that's important to understand, for better or for worse, probably for worse in this case, is that Boeing tends to make a pretty good airplane. Lion Air, unfortunately, has had some safety issues over the last number of years, and there have also been some safety issues in Indonesia. They did find the flight data recorder earlier this week, so that will help investigators know a little bit more about what happened. But you know, your follow-up question may or may not be, but I'm going to assume it's going to be, is this a problem perhaps in the United States? Because Southwest Airlines, American Airlines, and United Airlines all fly a version of this updated MAX airplane. My gut tells me that whatever happened was probably unique to this situation in Indonesia. And probably was not a problem with the airplane. I don't think people in the United States should necessarily be worried. It doesn't seem like the U.S. airlines are worried. It also doesn't seem like Boeing is worried. So the show is going to go on here in the United States.
Brian, another story that you've written about this week is about, you know, making consumers, airlines making consumers use the telephone to get help. Are there still airlines that do this, and why are they doing that?
Well, this story was a lot more fun, Steve. You know, anybody who needs help from an airline knows that the system is probably the same as it was 30 years ago or so. In almost all cases, if I have an issue with a seat assignment or I want to change my flight or whatever that I need to do, I probably have to call the airline's 1-800 number and speak with a person. And I wrote a column this week saying, you know what? I'm a millennial. I'm a bit of an old millennial, but everything that I do is on my mobile device. I actually hate to talk on the phone. which is odd for a journalist, I know. And wouldn't it be great if I could text my airline, tell them what I need, and they could text back? I have learned that there are a few airlines that do that. Alaska Airlines is one in the United States that will text you back. But generally, airlines work the same as they always do. And this was a timely question to ask because a colleague of mine spoke last week with David Neeleman, who was the CEO of JetBlue, and as we have discussed on this program before, is starting a new U.S. airline probably in 2021. And David Neeleman told my colleague, he said, look, you know, we're not going to have lots of agents answering the phone like this is 1985. We'll have some help on the phone, but generally we're going to try to get in touch with people via text message and social media, and he thinks that's going to work a lot better. And frankly, I do as well. I'm probably what you would call a high-touch customer, right, because my life is airlines, and I know all the loopholes, and I know what I want. And I just spent an inordinate amount of time on the phone with customer service at United and Delta and American, talking them through what I want. And it would be so much easier if I could be doing my regular work and then texting them on the side. It's something that a lot of people do already, say with a company like Apple. You know, your computer freezes or it crashes, and you go to your phone and you text Apple for help, and they walk you through it. For most people, it works pretty well.
Is there any hope that the legacy airlines might catch up on this sooner than later?
I don't have to tell you this, Steve. Legacy airlines move very, very slowly. And I have not seen that much of an appetite at American, Delta, and United to change what has always worked. I mean, something that they are doing is trying to create more full service options. So there are more things like changing your flight, for example, or maybe upgrading yourself that you can do on United.com or you could do on the mobile app. So that's good. But when it comes time to getting help from an actual human being, you usually either have to see them at the airport in person or you have to call the 800 number. I hope someday I'll just be able to text them or reach out to them on social media, but we're not quite there yet.
Another story you wrote I thought was very cool because, you know, we've talked a lot about how legacy airlines are trying to, you know, they have these new economy fares and they're trying to kind of compete with the low-cost airlines. The perspective from the low-cost airlines is kind of cool, though, and you've written that from Spirit's point of view.
Yeah, I covered Spirit Airlines earnings last week. And, you know, there were some folks out there that wondered when American, Delta, and United created these no-frills basic economy fares to compete with Spirit, if Spirit would be out of luck, if customers would say, you know what, I'm just going to fly American, I'm going to buy this basic economy fare, and I'm never going to fly Spirit again. Spirit executives said last week, you know what, we're doing fine. Customers still like us. We're still making a lot of money. You know what? American, United, Delta, they matched Spirit's fares before they had basic economy. They still match Spirit's fares. And it's working out just fine for Spirit. And I do think Spirit has made a bit of a culture change. A lot of folks don't really know about this, but 5 years ago, Spirit was an airline you probably didn't want to fly. They had very poor customer service, and that's something that they will admit right now. They said, look, our fares are very cheap, so you're going to fly us whether you want to fly us or not. And about 3 years ago, a new CEO came in and said, like, having cheap fares isn't enough. We have to treat our customers and our employees a little bit better. And it's still a bare bones operation, but when you get on the airplane, I'm told I haven't done it, but it doesn't look like everybody hates you anymore. It's a decent experience.
You've also been writing about Alaska Airlines, blaming some of its rivals for the Hawaii business being a little bit weak.
Well, it's funny, Steve, right? You know, people think that there's no competition in the airline business. And some of the times that is true. Maybe if you're going from Chicago to Champaign, Illinois, and you want to fly, there's only one or two airlines. But if you want to go to Hawaii, you have a lot of choices. And Alaska Airlines has created this very profitable flying franchise, mainly from the West Coast to Hawaii. Over the last 10 years or so, they've made a lot of money there. But other airlines noticed that Alaska was making a lot of money, including Chicago-based United. There's been a lot of new capacity going out to Hawaii. And as we know, when there's more capacity, fares go down. And Alaska Airlines said last week, it's basically Hawaii is basically the only area in their system that is really not doing as well materially as it was, say, the year before. And this is important now because, yes, it's a short-term problem, but it's probably going to get worse because we all know that Southwest Airlines is about to launch new flights from Hawaii, especially from the West Coast. So this is going to add more competition to Hawaii. It's going to depress prices further, and Alaska will probably be in some trouble. The good news is that when an airline is in trouble, consumers do very well. And so folks should probably look for a vacation to Hawaii right now, because my guess is you've never seen cheaper fares than you do right now.
Ryan, good stuff. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you, Steve.
Ryan Summers is aviation business editor for Skift.com. Follow along at Skift on Twitter and Brian Summers at Brian Summers. Make sure you also sign up for the weekly Skift Airline Innovation Report, skift.com/airline.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, stock of local interest we've been keeping our eye on, Tribune Publishing, up nearly 4% yesterday at $15.72 a share. The Tribune Publishing Company, owner of the Chicago Tribune, got three bids for the company at the deadline for bids to purchase Tribune Publishing, one from McClatchy, one from Donorail, and one from AIM Media, AIM Media. Again, Tribune Publishing up nearly 4% yesterday at $15.72 a share. It is time to check in with agriculture and commodities, and Orion Samuelson is with us this morning. Orion, good morning.
Well, good morning to you. We found out again yesterday that any talk of resolving the trade tariff situation can ignite a rally at the grain market. We saw soybeans up nearly 4% yesterday on hopes for easing tensions between the United States and China after President Trump said trade talks with Beijing were, quote, moving along nicely. His comments in a post on Twitter ignited the rally, reversing earlier weakness coming from sluggish corn and soybean export sales and worries about swelling soybean supplies as that U.S.-China trade war has dragged down demand for both. But one strategist here in Chicago said all we've heard from Trump in the last 3 or 4 months has been more tariffs, more tariffs. This is the first time we're hearing about progress, and it's coming from the highest level. At the end of the day, the January soybeans were up 30¼ cents a bushel, December corn up 3½ cents a bushel, and wheat prices yesterday ended at $5.08 a bushel in the December contract. So, again, any talk of solving the trade tariff situation can quickly lead to a rally, as it did yesterday. And in livestock trade, January feeder cattle were up 47 cents a pound, closing at 150.60 per hundredweight. December live cattle futures up 17 cents at $117.12. And lean hog futures mixed in bear spreading activity yesterday. The December hog contract dropped 25 cents to $58.20. I'm just minutes away from boarding a cab to head for O'Hare and from O'Hare to Kansas City, where the agriculture future of America, that's college people involved in agriculture and agribusiness studies, get together for their annual convention. There'll be over 800 members of the Agriculture Future of America there, and I'm looking forward to being a part of that group because it's a group that I've really talked about a good deal for the past decade or two. So we'll be talking to you tomorrow from Kansas City.
All right. Have a safe trip, Orion. Have a great weekend as well.
Thank you.
Orion Samuelson with us this morning. The morning show again tomorrow at 5 o'clock. right here on 720 WGN. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Friday, November the 2nd. The October jobs report due today. Analysts expect the company, the economy added to 208,000 jobs last month. On the low end, there have been some analysts that say maybe 135,000 jobs. The unemployment rate likely to remain unchanged at 3.7%. We'll also get a report with that on average hourly earnings for October. Experts are forecasting an increase of 0.1%. September trade deficit also due out today. Trade analysts looking for the deficit to widen slightly to $53.6 billion. And factory orders for September are being released. The smart money is predicting about a 0.5% increase on that. Still lots of earnings on the calendar today. Chevron, Exxon, Newell Brands, United States Steel Corporation, MSG Networks, and Seagate Technology, all reporting quarterly earnings. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Friday, November the 2nd.